text we heard read from the lectern this morning dealt with Jeremiah's vision of a fruitful land turned into a desert. The lectionary actually scheduled this text for September 16th, and it was a perfect fit for the second half of the series on the environment I'd started a week earlier. Of course, the interruption of my little series was the least of the consequences of the tragedy that unfolded on September 11th. As we conclude that series this morning, I realize enough time has passed that I should provide at least a brief recap of part one. Back on September 9th, we used another text from Jeremiah, along with a text from Genesis, to consider the forces that shape us as human beings. Those texts dealt with people and countries being clay in the hands of God, and compared God to a master potter who shapes people and nations. Then we dipped our toes into the psychology of Carl Jung and talked about the collective unconscious that shapes the way we see the world. We then imagined identical twins, with one being raised in the United States and another being raised in the slums of Calcutta, and considered how differently they would see the world in spite of their identical genetic makeup. The idea behind that sermon was that we all see the world through a cultural lens, a pair of glasses to carry the metaphor to the extreme, which has a great deal to do with how the world looks to us. It is possible for two people from different cultures to have completely different ideas about right and wrong because they view the world through different eyes. And in spite of those words from Jeremiah about our being clay in the hands of God, unless a person spends most of his or her time in prayer, it's likely our culture shapes us much more so than does God. We then considered the way we Americans view the earth itself. We've historically viewed the earth as a collection of resources to be extracted, and nature itself as something we do battle against. As the 21st century proceeds, it seems likely we're going to divide into two warring factions, the industrialists versus the environmentalists, and we find ourselves hoping there's room in this battle for those of us who seek a middle ground. And I concluded the sermon that day by saying today we would examine the industry/environment debate more closely and see if there's any way for us to remove these cultural glasses that give us such a skewed view of the world. As I've wrestled with this over the past months, I've come to the conclusion it's going to be very difficult to remove our cultural glasses. We Americans like to imagine that if only the rest of the world would institute the right economic policies, we could wind up with an entire planet living the luxurious types of lives we do. But that's just not true. If the over 6 billion people of this planet ate like we do, used energy like we do, and generated waste like we do, human beings would suck the life right out of this planet in fairly short order. Still, our cultural lens not only encourages us to keep on consuming more and more and more, the companies we have created in order to sustain our way of life often strip poor countries of as many of their natural resources as possible, while increasing the wealth of those countries as little as possible. Now, if your cultural glasses are strapped on tight, you're thinking right now that I'm sounding un-American. But before you accuse me of being some sort of anti-American radical bent on bringing down our economic system, allow me to take a few shots at the more militant environmentalists, so I'm absolutely sure I've upset everybody. After all, my favorite living philosopher, Ken Wilber, says that if you upset both the liberals and the conservatives, that does not necessarily mean you are right, but it is definitely one of the prerequisites of being right. There are those that think we should slam the brakes on civilization and return to nature. Return to nature. There's this pervasive dream out there that we'll one day return to an agrarian society with each of us tilling the soil and raising crops, living in some sort of idyllic harmony with Mother Nature. Well, dream on, because that's not going to happen. Furthermore, most of us, myself certainly included, are not willing to give up the bountiful supply of food and the availability of safe medicine, to name just a few of the ways our corporate culture has helped make life so wonderful. And while our attitude toward the earth, toward nature, is in dire need of adjustment, we should never delude ourselves into thinking everything in nature is harmony and light. You don't have to spend too much time observing Mother Nature to come face to face with the fact that we did not acquire our man versus nature mentality without reason. Nature can be a very cruel place. It is violent and dangerous. And I, for one, have no desire to struggle for survival without the aid of modern civilization. There's one thing, however, I believe we have to accept if we hope to have any chance of removing our cultural lens and viewing the world with honest eyes. Companies, the corporations we've created, have a lot of power in our culture. They do own or control the majority of the world's resources, which they exploit for our benefit. Due to the fact our elected officials have to raise enormous sums of money to attain and hold on to public office, corporations have a great influence in both major political parties. Our news media is corporately owned. And speaking of the media, from the time we're old enough to be propped in front of a television set, our culture shapes us into the people, or should I say the consumers, that we become as adults. So when we see the world through our cultural lens, it's a lens that has been created by the very powers that view the earth itself as a resource to be exploited for our benefit. As I started taking seriously the effect human beings are having on our planet, and as I researched the issue, I kept running into the same problem over and over again. The people involved in this environmental debate have become polarized into hardened positions on one side or the other. One camp insists there's no problem. These people claim that we can go on indefinitely consuming the planet's resources as we do now. And they loudly insist that everything from global warming to the destruction of the rainforests to the dwindling energy supply are just a bunch of myths invented by a group of radicals bent on bringing down the American way of life. The other camp, for the most part, claims that it's probably already too late, and our only hope is for all businesses and industries to immediately shut their doors and send their workers home. And there are people on both sides of the issue who honestly believe what they are saying, but make no mistake, each group also has its share of folks who have hidden political agendas. In my reading on this industry versus the environment issue, I kept coming across the name of a man named Thomas Berry. It seems Thomas Berry has the respect of a lot of the people I myself respect, which is why I kept running into his name. People from Rabbi Michael Lerner, who I believe is one of the world's most inspired religious leaders, to Brian Swim, who is a brilliant mathematician and cosmologist. They kept referring to Berry's thinking as humanity's greatest hope for long-term survival upon this planet. And so for the balance of this sermon, I would like to acquaint you with the thoughts of Thomas Berry. You will find his thinking radical in places. I certainly do. But he's one of the few informed people in this conversation who is saying, yes, we have a problem, but no, it's not too late for humanity to overcome the problem. And I honestly do not believe he has any sort of hidden political agenda. I feel confident if you asked Thomas Berry if he is a Democrat or Republican, he would laugh in your face. I think he is seeing the world free of the cultural lens that skews our vision. And who knows? Perhaps Thomas Berry, this gentle 86-year-old man who has spent his life studying the cultures and religions of the world, can at least help us to see through our own cultural lens a little more clearly. First, Thomas Berry says that the biosystem of the Earth is currently going through a radical change. The last time such a change occurred was 67 million years ago, when the Mesozoic era ended and the Cenozoic era began, with the environmental changes that brought about the demise of the dinosaurs and the rise of mammals. The Western world is creating changes to the Earth's environment at a rate that has not been seen since that time. Our industrial culture is changing the planet's geological structure, its chemical composition, and its living forms on both land and sea. More species of plants and animals are becoming extinct every year now than became extinct over 1,000-year periods in the not-so-distant past. Berry blames this radical change on the burning of fossil fuels, the disturbance of river systems through the dumping of human waste and pesticides, and the plundering of natural resources, such as the rainforests, for the perceived benefit of you and me. He says the 67 million year old Cenozoic era of the Earth is now ending as natural selection is replaced by cultural selection. Berry blames all of this on the human attitude toward the rest of the world. Human beings regard all modes of being other than human being as having no rights. I know my cultural lens is strapped on tight because he's really speaking to me here. The value of anything and everything is measured by how much use it is to us. Over the past several hundred years, a radical divide has occurred between humans and all things not human. Berry says there are three events, historical events, that brought us to our current dilemma. The first historical event was the joining of the biblical Christian tradition with Greek humanism about 2,000 years ago. This resulted in a view of the universe that placed human beings at the very center. Everything that happens, anywhere, anytime, matters only in and how it relates to and affects human beings. This anthropocentric view of the universe keeps us from seeing the world as an interconnected web of life and resources, and instead allows us to view all things as unimportant in their own right, unless and until we find ways to exploit them for our benefit. The second historical event was the Black Death that occurred in the 1340s. One-third of the European population died. With no knowledge of germs, the people could only assume God was punishing them for their wickedness. We couldn't understand this God, but we were certainly afraid of him. And this enigmatic God, who was far removed from nature, was our only hope. The world and nature, more than ever, became the enemy, became evil things to be escaped. The third historical moment was the most critical, and covered the last two decades of the 19th century. America was moving from a farm economy to an industrial economy, or in Berry's words, from an organic economy to an extractive economy. The development of the modern corporation in this period led to today's almost complete acceptance of the human conquest of nature. Nature is seen to exist for one reason and one reason only: so we can extract things out of it for our benefit. I'll quote Thomas Berry. The functioning biological systems of the Earth that had governed the functioning of the planet for 4.6 billion years came under the assault of humans. This was the time we set forces in motion that would disturb the chemical composition of the air, water, and soil to an extent that would affect the entire network of organic life on the planet. These three events, according to Berry, the religious conviction that all creation is centered around human beings, the view amplified by the Black Death that nature is evil, and the rise of the corporate culture for the purpose of using nature for humanity's purposes, these three events have set a course for the planet. Barry compares the direction of our planet to the course of the Titanic. This is an amazing analogy. Those in command of the Titanic had evidence that icebergs lay ahead and received several iceberg warnings, but the course had been set and nobody wanted to alter its direction. A change of course would have been a great inconvenience to the passengers on the ship, not to mention the economic interests that controlled the ship. So the well-being of the ship itself was endangered for the perceived convenience of its passengers. In his books, Barry provides lots of statistics regarding the deteriorating condition of the Earth and the many warnings science and nature are giving us to show we're on a dangerous course. From studies on global warming to the amount of topsoil being lost every year to the fact we have cut down 95% of the primordial forests on this continent, Barry supports his allegation that we're on a collision course with a pretty hazardous future. I'm not going to bore you with lists of statistics, but I can summarize Barry's concern by saying he believes the opposition between economic interests and ecological interests will become the central issue of life on Earth this century. And there are two facts Barry says will become evident to all of us within the next two or three decades. First, the industrial effort to create a wonderland is in fact creating a waste world. And second, nature is not the enemy. In fact, humanity will either learn to live in greater harmony with nature, or nature will remove all or a very large percentage of us from the biosystem. Well, it sounds like pretty dire stuff, and there's countless prophets of doom using these statistics and making frightening predictions about our ecological future. But the reason so many of those thinkers I respect are followers of Thomas Barry is that Barry actually offers us some hope for the future. Barry actually has enough faith in God and enough faith in humanity to believe we're going to pull through this mess. And he tells us how that's going to happen. Thomas Barry says it is the duty of humanity at this point in our evolution to consciously will the next stage of the evolutionary process. He calls this the great work and says it is our place in history to re-envision our place in the world, and in doing so, to become a more evolved type of human being. We must become more spiritual beings. We must develop a sense of oneness with the whole of creation. Religion plays a critical role in this, but not the type of religion that sets forth dogmatic rules for all to follow in order to escape this world at one's death. We need the type of religion that calls us forward to a higher way of thinking, that asks us to embrace the beauty of nature, not to treat the world as something to be escaped. That may sound like pie in the sky dreaming, but as nearly as I can tell, we either work for exactly the type of changes in our attitudes toward ourselves and toward nature that Barry is envisioning, or we pretend there is no problem and plunder the earth beyond repair for our children and grandchildren. Is it possible for us to evolve? Is it conceivable that people who control the corporate world could become more responsible citizens? That the CEOs of the great corporations could themselves become environmentalists? Yes, that's got to be possible. In fact, there's a growing sense of ecological responsibility among many business leaders in the United States. A sound economic plan for our future and concern for our planet are not mutually exclusive ideas. I consider myself an environmentalist, but those who automatically label corporations and business as the enemy aren't helping matters at all. And my hope, my prayer, is that humankind is ready for the great work God has placed before us, the great work of becoming a more evolved, more spiritual species at all levels of the human endeavor. I don't know precisely how to solve the industry versus ecology conflict, but I do know the answer lies in working together to create a more harmonious relationship between humanity and the rest of nature. Human beings simply must relearn that sense of awe and reverence for planet Earth and all her inhabitants. That's the task that lies before us. Our evolution into more spiritual beings is the hope of humanity, the great work that we have been given. It's time for transformation. I leave you with the closing paragraph of Thomas Berry's latest book, which is called The Great Work. After warning that we are at a very dangerous moment in the history of our planet, Berry writes, "The transformation must take place within a brief period. Otherwise, it is gone forever. In the immense story of the universe, that so many of these dangerous moments have been navigated successfully is some indication that the universe is for us rather than against us. We need only summon these forces to our support in order to succeed. Although the human challenge to these purposes must never be underestimated, it's difficult to believe that the larger purposes of the universe or of the planet Earth will ultimately be thwarted." I believe, and I certainly pray, that Thomas Berry is right.